Merħba għal-program Minajnejn Barrani, fejn jiena Colin Fitz niltaqa u niddiskuti pajjiżna ma' diversi persuni ta' nazzjonalitajiet differenti li għal xi raġuni u oħra għamlu lill-Malta id-dar tagħhom. Il-programm jixxandar kull nhar ta' tlieta fit-tminja fil-għaxija b'repetizzjoni l-ħamis fl-10 ta' filgħodu, kif ukoll jinstab fuq is-sit elettroniku ta' Campus FM. We're talking to Angela Peel, originally from Switzerland, but who has been in Malta for many years and is married to a Maltese man. So, Angela, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to be speaking to you. And first of all, tell us a little bit about yourself, the countries you've lived in, as in like Switzerland, and perhaps you've lived in some other countries.
Yes, I've lived practically half my life in Switzerland and the other half of my life in Malta, and that's 54 years.
Ah, excellent. So I didn't want to ask your age because you're a lady, but you've come up with it yourself, so that's great. So 54 years, half in Malta, half in Switzerland. So you're married to John, who's Maltese.
Yes, that's right.
But Peel is not a typical Maltese surname.
No, his grandfather came from England.
I see. Okay. So John is your husband, he's Maltese, and do you have family here in Malta, and where do you live? Could you tell us a little bit about that, and also what kind of job you do?
Yes, we have two children. Stephanie is 26, and our son is John as well, and he's 23. I'm working as a tourist guide, mainly with the German market, because mm-hmm. my mother language from Switzerland, I come from the German part, so I mainly work with the German clients, and I love my job, I wouldn't want to change it.
And here in Malta, have you lived in various places or the same place all your life?
We have lived before in Blat Albaida, mm-hmm. and later we moved to Sepuj. We have been here 18 years now.
18 years. So we'll talk about the places you've lived in Malta a little bit later. Let's go back to Switzerland. Tell us a little bit about your life in Switzerland, the city you're from, and the kind of lifestyle you had over there.
I grew up in Bern, the capital city, and later on my parents moved to a smaller town just outside where I finished my school. After I finished school, I did a three-year bank study course with a diploma. And after that, I went for a year to England, to London, to learn English. Mm-hmm. And then I started to work in the school of big bank. All the big banks at that time had schools for students, and I was a secretary and teacher over there. Mm. And during that time, I spent another couple of months in Paris to learn French.
And so around what age are we talking about?
24.
24 years old. And is that the time you came to Malta? Because I believe that's how your connection with Malta started.
Yes, actually in 1984, it was a funny story because a very good friend of mine came to Malta on a holiday. And she came back and she didn't like it. She said, there is nothing to do, it's all dry. She came in at the end of summer.
So it was dry and hot, and she didn't like it.
And she didn't like it at all. And I mean, we are from Switzerland, we don't have the sea, so how can somebody not like an island? And I decided to come and see for myself. So I had somebody telling me something negative about Malta, and I still wanted to come and try it out.
May I ask, though, how did you hear about Malta for the first time? Was it through your friend, or was there an advertising campaign in Switzerland, or...?
No, it was through my friend. I never heard mm-hmm. about Malta, and I don't think anyone else heard about Malta before. It wasn't publicized in 1984. Mm-hmm. So the year after, I decided to come on a holiday, mm-hmm. and I wanted to do a diving holiday, to book a diving holiday. And then a couple of weeks before I came, another friend of mine wanted to join, but she wasn't keen on diving. And I had booked at Meliha Bay. Okay. And when she said she's coming with me, we decided to go more central, to be near the nightlife and so on. And we ended up booking the Cerma Palace Hotel in Marsa Scala, okay. which is as far away from the center as the Meliha Bay.
Exactly. St. Julian's is where the nightlife was even then, I think, and still you were the other side of Malta, but just as far.
Yes, and I think this had to be, because very early into my holiday, I met my future husband.
Ah.
And he was working at the Cerma Palace at that time.
So it was meant to be. That's how you met him.
Yes.
And first of all, did you enjoy your holiday? Apart from meeting John, did you enjoy the holiday? What were your first impressions of Malta? Did you also think it was dry and perhaps a little bit boring?
No, not at all. I prepared myself well. I bought a travel guide and I read it front to back and back to front. I love history. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was just reading the travel guide. It was clear I would like my holiday here. What we did, we came in October, so it was still quite pleasant, warm, hot. And we used to sightsee in the morning and find a beach in the afternoon.
What was the circumstance where you met your husband?
I was working as a barman at the time, so it was quite easy to meet up.
And how did it proceed to the fact that you fell in love, got married, and decided that one of you had to move to each other's to the other's country?
We never really discussed where we would be living. I mean, at that time, relationship on distance, it was different. We had the telephone, which was very expensive. Mm-hmm. We had no computers. We had no mobile phones.
Absolutely.
And so once a week a letter, which we both still have. And so after 2.5 years, we decided, two and a half years later, we got married. So we decided about 1.5 years after we met, we decided to get married.
And the decision was that you would come here rather than he would come to Switzerland?
It was never really a discussion. For me, it was clear I come to Malta. Mm. Because I loved it here from the beginning. And Switzerland is a country where people look for themselves. It's not very easy to make friends when you are a foreigner. Mm-hmm. And John did not know German. Mm-hmm. So I think it would have been very difficult for him. And I don't think he would have liked it.
While it was easier for you to settle here, first of all, you knew English, so you knew one of the languages here. And you feel the people are a little bit more friendly or open?
Yes, definitely. That was one of the things I really liked when I came here on holiday. I was welcomed even into his family the very first week when I was here on holidays. And all his friends, they made me feel I belong.
But your family, you're telling them, I am in love with a man from Malta, a place that you hardly knew yourself a few months before. What was the reaction?
No, it was actually quite a bad reaction from my mother's side. My mother never heard about Malta. She knew I flew a few thousand kilometers, and I think she had the impression I'm going to marry into an African country.
Because it was somewhere in the south, but she probably didn't know where it was.
No, she had no idea. Mm-hmm. And all concerning around the marriage, I had to discuss with my father. Mm-hmm. But then they came for the wedding, mm-hmm. and I think that's when she changed her mind.
And but you still obviously stay in touch and visit Switzerland, I assume, all through the marriage.
Yes, at the beginning when we got married, money was a bit short, and we had to settle. We bought the flat and then the children. So at the beginning, my parents used to come much more often to Malta, but now my parents are getting old, mm-hmm. and I make it a point to go twice a year to Switzerland.
And your children, how are they sort of fully integrated into Malta? I mean, do they speak Maltese, or are they in Switzerland?
Both children speak both languages, Maltese and English. I went to school here. Mm-hmm. I tried to make an effort to speak to them in German, but it wasn't natural, really, because I wouldn't have spoken to them in Swiss German. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't have profited from that. German is... it's not my mother language as such.
So Swiss German is different from German German.
Yes, it is different. The Germans don't understand us clearly when we speak in Swiss. Mm-hmm. And the children did take German as a additional language in school, so they know the basics. Mm-hmm. But it was never really a problem because my parents both spoke English.
But do the kids have they shown interest in your original country in Switzerland?
When they were smaller, they were always happy to come along and visit the grandparents, and when they grew older, my daughter, she would have come every time with me. She really loves traveling, and I did. Take sometimes Stephanie, sometimes John used to come with me, sometimes when the whole family. But lately I just go by myself. Like, my parents are getting older and they're not able to go out so much, so it's mostly we stay at home and enjoy each other's company, and that's a bit boring for the rest of the family.
Angela Peel, originally from Switzerland, has been living in Malta for 27 years. The Maltese language, you know, you've settled here, you've brought up two children here, you've been here a long time, you live in Zeebrugge. Have you learned the Maltese language? Have you picked up any of it? Have you gone to a course, perhaps, or picked it up through conversation? Or have you felt that you didn't need to, you could get by without the Maltese language?
I would have liked to learn it, and I'm a bit ashamed to 27 years in Malta, and I don't speak it. I understand a lot, and that comes from trying to help the children with homework when they were smaller. And the problem was, or the thing was, that whenever I tried to speak in Maltese, especially when we started living in Zeebrugge, the people from Zeebrugge wanted to show that they speak English. So they used to teach me the vegetable and everything in English.
In Maltese,
yeah. But besides that, they would speak to me in English. And very early on, I did go to a course in one of the government schools as an evening course. I did 3 years, so I have the basic of the grammar, but I never really managed to put all those words in the correct order.
One thing that has been told to me during the course of my recordings for this program by various people is that these kind of courses seem to be very good on grammar and on paper, but there isn't that much conversation and the opportunity for you to practice.
That's exactly how I felt. Mm-hmm. After 3 years, I think I knew the grammar quite well, but we never did a lot of conversation to actually practice what we learned. It was more grammar, mm-hmm. and learning words, and that didn't help to make a conversation.
And there's so much television and radio in English that you don't need to watch, you don't find yourself watching Maltese television, for example, to pick up the language from there.
That's exactly it. There are so many programs in other language, in English especially, although at the beginning we only had the Italian and the local programs, but even then there were English programs. So I tend to watch those even today, although since John, my husband, is involved in the local dramas, I try to watch them and try to understand them.
Oh yes, of course, yes. John Peel is an actor on television and various dramas and as a hobby. And do you find yourself watching some of the Maltese soap operas? And what's your impression?
Yeah, I like to watch the ones John is taking part, but I prefer to wait until they're out on DVD and watch them in order instead of waiting 1 week after the other and try to catch up what was on in last week's program.
And you understand the language there in that, or is John constantly translating for you?
He's not constantly translating. I get the sense of the story and of the sentences, and then if I need to know something specific, then he'll help me.
But, well, you're mentioning Maltese television dramas and seeing your husband on television, but more importantly, and this is another great story of a foreign person who has come to Malta and taken on a very interesting aspect of Maltese culture, the fact that you have produced a book which is all about the famous international movies, and also there's a section about Maltese movies. You've produced this book about all the movies ever filmed in Malta. So, Angela, tell us a little bit about this book.
Yeah, that was a very interesting project. The book is called Malta on the Silver Screen, being the cinema aspect of the earlier mentioning of silver screen when you talk about cinema films.
So it's all about the films that were produced in Malta, not the television series or advertisements, of which there were plenty as well. All the films ever produced in Malta.
Yes, it is only the cinema films which are covered in the book. The reason being, there are so many television series and television films. I had to stop quite soon and decide just to concentrate on the cinema films, which is of interest to much more people than television and. Advert and things like that. So it started about 12 years ago when a friend of mine, actually a guide colleague, Pat Flores Martin, made a tour in
Valletta. For tourists?
Yes, for tourists in Valletta, and she called it like in 80 minutes around the film world. Okay. So she took us through various streets of Valletta where films have been shot. And from that, I wanted to know more about the films, to put just 90 minutes. And I came across a list from the Film Commission, and I realized the first films were in the 1940s. Mm-hmm. And then through research and talking to other people who are interested in this subject, I got to know that 1925 was actually the very first film shot in Malta. And then till the end of 2013, the book covers 116 films. Some of them were just very short scenes, a day or two, the most filmed here. But then there are others which have 19 weeks, like Gladiator, or other famous films, Munich, Eichmann.
And you've built up quite a collection of a lot of these films. Have you watched them all? I mean, even the ones that were made in the 1920s?
I have actually seen some of the very early films. They were shown through the Malta Film Commission on various occasions. Mm. And one which came out recently on a new Blu-ray is The Battles of the Coronel and Falkland Islands, which was the second film shot in Malta in 1927.
And it's a film about a famous World War I battle, isn't it?
It's about two World War battles of the Coronel Islands and the Falkland Islands.
Yes, the famous naval island. So a lot of these early films made in Malta by the British forces or British Film Institute, etc., would have been about, for example, Navy stories, and Malta being obviously a naval base with ships and plenty of extras, sailors and soldiers, Malta would have been perfect for these kind of early films to be made.
Exactly. Most of the early films, the British Navy was actually involved, the Admiralty had to give permission, and certain scenes were actually people from the ship, the sailors themselves, who would take part.
And then the rest of the book, there's a chapter about every film, right?
Yes, there is quite a lot of information on every film, like the director, the actors, then the storyline, the film locations, which is very, very good. If somebody wants to see where actually the film was filmed, he can get it in my reference book and actually go to the places. Then there is anecdotes, which I managed to collect through interviews with actors, directors, makeup artists.
You mean the local ones, right?
Yes, local people. To contact people from abroad is very, very difficult. Mm-hmm. Even while they're filming here, they're so closed to sets, you hardly manage to get close.
Yeah, security.
Exactly. Yes. And Then there is trivia, like anything interesting on how much the film costs, on how much box office success and other awards and information like that.
So 116 movies filmed in Malta up till when the book came out, which was 2014. So there's been more since then. But out of those 116, were there any films that you were very surprised or that you managed to dig out that very few people remember had been filmed in Malta and that were a bit unusual perhaps?
There are lots of films which never really were famous or well known, but my biggest surprise is when I realized that Da Vinci Code was some parts were filmed here. That's one of my favorite books and films. And then others like The Race of the Titanic, for which the big water tank was built. Clive Cussler is one of my favorite writers. And I only realized through the film that actually this is a Clive Cussler book made into a film.
Although apparently he was not very happy with the film.
No, not very. There were some differences to the book.
What a lovely thing she was, standing as high in the water as one of your skyscrapers. And God himself, they said, couldn't sink her. Then in 2 hours she was gone. And 1,500 souls with her.
Control, this is Deep West at 8,000 feet. Negative contacts.
This is Turtle. No contacts.
I think we hit the jackpot.
It's at the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean.
You're talking about 12,500 feet underwater.
Which leaves us with only one choice.
Are you talking about raising the Titanic?
Yeah. It's the biggest job with the highest stakes anybody ever dreamt of.
There's a leak. We have to stop.
What do you mean by a leak? I don't even know what you're talking about.
It was a secret. That's what I'm telling you. Nobody knew about it.
This is Control. Do not exceed 12,000 foot depth limit. No.
Starfish, we're flooding by the surface. Over.
Starfish.
It's gone dead.
She's going down fast. They gotta lose some weight.
Release that damn thing. Sink.
I took this job on two conditions. One, that I handle the salvage end of it my way, and two, that you stay out of my hair.
You're gonna crush the Deep Quest.
Indicates electrical fire on the left.
We can't cut loose that submersible. We gotta bring up the Titanic.
Target date's 2 weeks away.
Our target date just got changed.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Mark.
But were there any obscure films, perhaps, from other countries that most Maltese people would not know about?
There were quite a few Indian films, Tamil language films. Mm-hmm. And again, they came mostly to Malta for the beautiful scenery. Mm-hmm. Because their films are 3 hours long. Mm-hmm. They have music videos lasting 10, 15 minutes.
Yes, lots of dancing. Yes. And in India and in Bollywood, as it's known, these films would have been watched by millions of people. And yet here in Malta, we wouldn't really know because we're not exposed to that film industry.
That's right. And I was lucky. I have managed to get hold of some of those films. I have actually seen them. And they used the beautiful scenes like Tingley Cliffs or Vittorioso on the Steps. They did choose nice locations. And those, I think, the Maltese wouldn't know about it.
So we spoke about the 116 international films made in Malta up till when the book came out, and now there's been more, which you will update us upon in a new edition of the book or an update in the future. But there's also a section about the Maltese films in your book. Could you tell us something about them?
Yes, there are 22 Maltese films which I covered in the book. The first one was in 1971. It was called Il Gaccia, The Cage, and it was a project of Mario Philip Azzopardi. Okay. And there were many other films, some were actually in English, like Operation White Dove.
Which was made in 1992, I think. It was about a plot to assassinate the Pope on a visit to Malta, yeah?
Exactly. And they actually found a local shop owner who really looked like the Pope, and he had never acted, and they used him as the Pope.
The Pope John Paul II at the time. Yes, yes. Any more?
Yeah, and then in two films, my husband took part, Merat al-Passat and Air. Mm-hmm. And in Air also, our son, who was like a street urchin stealing from rich people in Valletta, which was a funny story as well. And then there are films later on, religious subjects. There were quite a few.
There was one about St. Paul, wasn't there, I believe?
Yes, and Anno Domini by Paul Ponello, Paolo da Tarso, mm-hmm. of Tony Panese. And then there were
films based on television series.
Exactly, like Santa Monica.
There are also some famous comedy films which did quite well at the local cinemas, right? Like, was there one something, a parody of Armageddon?
Maltageddon, it was called. There were quite some funny.
And more recently, Simshar, is that in the book, or did that come out too late?
Simshar came out too late, as did The Breeder.
As The Breeder, so they came out too late, they came out after your book came out.
Exactly, the last film which is covered in the book is Mark Doneo's Silhouette, mm-hmm. one of very good action and car races films, really done professionally.
And how long did it take you to put this book together?
It took me a good 10 years.
A whole 10 years, and you were tracking down DVDs from around the world, and how did what was the process of doing that?
Yes, at the beginning I never had the idea of publishing a book, but then all of a sudden I had so much information that a lot of my friends urged me to compile it into a book, and I wasn't comfortable just publishing a book without having seen the actual films. So I started searching on internet and various places where you can get DVDs through my friends who went on holidays or studies to Russia, to India, whatever, and they actually brought me some films back from those countries.
So out of the 116 international films made in Malta, do you think you've seen 100 or almost all?
I would say about 100. There are some very rare ones, like there was an erotic film.
An erotic film? Filmed in Malta?
Yeah, it was called Voir Mal te Mourir. It was a French production, and I think it had some quite problems with people not dressed properly, and I could find...
No censorship problems.
Yes, and I could only find very few information about it, and there seems no DVD available on this film.
Oh, that is a shame. But it was made in 1976?
Yes, that's right, 1976.
There are also a number of films listed, famous films, which one had no idea Malta had anything to do with, but maybe a little scene was shot here which didn't involve actors, just a background shot, or they used models. I'm talking here about Mosquito Squadron, and there was a science fiction film from the early 80s, which...
Inseminoid.
Which used shots and scenes of Malta, or Gozo even, and they were inserted into the film, but there was no big hoo-ha that this film was made in Malta because they didn't bring actors over or anything like that.
Yeah, that's right. In Seminole, it had a barren landscape on the cliffs.
In Gozo.
In Gozo.
So, and it was masquerading as an alien planet.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And then there was Alexander, which showed only a shot of Grand Harbor as an opening scene. There was no actors here.
The Battle of the River Plate, which again shows the Grand Harbor, which is masquerading as the River Plate area of Uruguay, I believe, where the Graf Spee, the famous ship, the Graf Spee, sank.
Yes, I believe that one was had some scenes shot in Gozo, in Rueira, behind Fungus Rock.
And also famous actors, not just British or American, but also people who are famous in India or Germany or France, who came to Malta and did movies here, and they're all listed in your book, and people that you'd never expect or would have thought that came to Malta, or perhaps people that we didn't know had come to film in Malta, and they're all listed there, right? And there were also people who came and filmed in Malta before they were famous.
That's right. One good example is Jean-Claude Van Damme in Black Eagle. He was not famous at all when that film was shot here in Malta, and that was practically all shot here.
And that was in the late 80s, before he had stardom in the 90s.
Exactly, before he became famous.
Jet fighter was missing in the Mediterranean.
Three of those planes were carrying highly secret laser guidance systems.
The best man for the job is codenamed Black Eagle.
We can only guess how much the Americans know.
According to a computer run, we put splashdown in a sector 3 miles south of Suava Point off Malta.
Now, it's an undercover high-tech conflict in an ancient land. No armies. There is no glory. This fight is one on one. It's combat in a world of double identity.
His name's Ken Taney. For all intents and purposes, a marine biologist at the University of Hawaii.
It is a world of double agents.
I know quite a bit about Miss Parker.
You must have me confused with someone else.
A world of double meaning.
It says you're a priest.
A dangerous world. Exotic and sensuous. Where trouble is only a heartbeat away.
Dad, is someone trying to hurt you?
I'm doing a job for our country.
And they're bad men, aren't they?
They probably think we are bad men, Brian.
For both sides, there's only one rule. Win. Black Eagle. This is the new front line. Will against will. Force against force. One on one. Joe Kasugi, Jean-Claude Van Damme, Black Eagle.
And one interesting thing is that Bollywood was quite heard about in the last few years, and there is actually some of those actors who were here in Malta for these Indian films. They are at Madame Tussauds wax figure cabinet in London.
Oh, so they're that famous nowadays?
Yes.
That's incredible. I can also mention from reading your book, Elizabeth Hurley, who eventually became quite a famous film producer and was very famous for being Hugh Grant's girlfriend for many years. She filmed a German movie called The Skipper here in Malta before she was famous. And also Patsy Kensit, who was a famous British actress, again, and a pop star, and German pop stars, and all kinds of famous international people who it's good to see all listed in one place, thanks to this reference work. You must be very proud of it.
I am. It was amazing having the first printed book in my hands.
And we can expect an updated version or perhaps a second book related to the more recent movies in the near future.
Yes, don't know yet in what form it's going to be, but I'm updating my database regularly and collecting for the moment to see whether it's going to be an update, a reprint of the book, or if it's going to be a second book.
So the book is still available for sale, and remind us what it's called?
The book is called Malta on the Silver Screen, and it's available in most leading bookstores and also Heritage Malta sites, the museum sites, and obviously directly.
You've had good feedback.
Yes, I had very good feedback.
And have you had interest from abroad about this book?
Yes, I had quite a few people from all over the world, actually, who contacted me through my Facebook page of the book and asked where they can buy it.
Paul Newman, he's a thief. Police officers, a convicted thief.
I sentence you to 20 years.
An imprisoned thief.
Dynamite!
An escaping thief. Who leads a charmed life, because Paul Newman is the Macintosh man, and whatever he does, he's not what you think.
Who are you?
Joseph Reed.
Your new name is Raymond Cruikshank.
Who are you?
System, you're a Canadian.
Who are you?
I'm a British intelligence officer, incognito.
Where are you from?
You know bloody well where I'm from.
You are a naturalized American.
He's a wanted man. Congratulations, Commissioner.
Come on, Reardon. What did you do with the diamonds, Reardon?
The Macintosh man. Whoever he is, he's not what you think.
Turn around.
A routine diamond theft becomes an international scandal of murder and treason in The Macintosh Man.
They're going to Malta.
Malta, the exotic jewel of the Mediterranean, is teeming with agents.
Impossible. Look. Detain me, lock me up, but for God's sake, search the Artina. Slade is on board.
More than anyone else in Great Britain today, I stand for law and order.
The Macintosh Man. Hunted by Interpol. Betrayed by the woman he loves. And the only man who can save him is dead.
Now let's see how good they really are.
This is The Macintosh Man, John Huston's international thriller of espionage, murder, and intrigue. Nothing is real but deception. Nothing is certain but danger. And nothing is nearer than death. The Macintosh Man, whoever he is, he's not what you think. The Macintosh Man.
Edin tisamaw il-program Minajnejn Barranin fuq Campus FM li jixxandar kull nhar ta' tlieta fit-tminja ta' filgħaxija b'repetizzjoni l-ħamis fl-10 ta' filgħodu, kif ukoll jitstab fuq is-sit elettroniku ta' Campus FM. This program is called Minajnejn Barranin. Malta through foreign eyes. It is broadcast on Campus FM 103.7, or it's also available online at the Campus FM Malta website.
Thank you.
We're talking to Angela Peel, originally from Switzerland, but who has been in Malta for many years and is married to a Maltese man. Now, let's move on from the movies and the books. Another aspect of Maltese culture that you immersed yourself in is the lace, if I'm not mistaken. Could you tell us something about that?
Yes, that I love handcrafts, and lace was always in my mind to learn it. Only in Switzerland I was too far away from areas where they actually do it, and I never really came across courses in Switzerland.
So Swiss lace, this is before you got to know about Malta?
Yes, because we have, like in the mountains or in the industrial areas, there are people who do lace. And so when I came to Malta and I saw all this lace here,
the famous Bitilla.
Exactly, the famous Bitilla. Mm-hmm. I wanted to learn it. Mm-hmm. And I actually enrolled myself into a government course lasting 6 years. Mm-hmm. And I finished that course, and then I became a member of Bitilla, which is the Malta Lace Union. Mm-hmm. And was involved a bit also in the committee for some years.
And is there a big interest? Is there a big group, and or is it a dying art? I mean, what's the deal on that?
I think it has been revived again, because there are much more people who are taking up lessons and who are doing lace. Even if you go to an artisan fair here, anywhere really, in the villages, you always find people displaying lace.
But are there big differences between lace in Switzerland and lace here in Malta?
I think so. It's completely differently worked. The pillows are different. The stitches are always more or less the same. But the patterns are different. We have here in Malta the Maltese cross, mm-hmm. which makes the Maltese lace.
So in world terms, Maltese and Gozzatin lace, it deserves the praise that's usually heaped upon it?
Oh, yes, definitely. When you think that English queens used to get their gloves from Gozo, mm-hmm. it shows that it was worldwide liked.
Back to your general life here in Malta. When you've been in the village, perhaps at the beginning, when you first moved here, you know, shopping at the vegetable van, walking in the street, did you sense that you were being welcomed, or was there a bit of suspicion? Did you feel at home straight away?
I think they did look up to me as a foreigner, and although I'm from Switzerland, for most of my neighbors, I'm Link Lisa.
Is that what they call them? What they call you? They still do.
They still do.
So any foreigner for some of your neighbors is Link Lisa.
Yes, now we are two. We have another neighbor, and she's not from England neither.
And so she's Link Lisa as well.
Yeah, it's strange, but no, I was very welcomed, and all my neighbors, when we meet on the street, they say, if you need something, come and ask, and they made me very much welcome from the beginning, and even going shopping, you know the people. The thing is, my son used to go to school here at the government school in Sepúch. Mm-hmm. So you take them to school, you meet the mothers in the same class or the same year, and you start talking, you meet on the market, you always stop for a chat. I feel very, very comfortable here.
And any problems you've encountered over the years, any frustrations perhaps moments when you've said, oh, this wouldn't happen in Switzerland, I wish, you know, I was back home? For as you said, you love Malta and you've had a very good life here, but sometimes, and this is the point of the program, a pair of fresh eyes from outside our culture will perhaps help us improve things. Is there anything you can say that you don't like about Malta?
There's hardly anything I don't like about Malta, but there are a few points, and one of them, now I got used to it, but at the beginning I really struggled with the unpunctuality of the Maltese. When you say 5 o'clock and then 5:30, still nobody is here.
So when you organize something and you say 5 o'clock, you expect them to come at 5 o'clock, not 5 o'clock for people to come at 5:30 or 6.
Exactly, because what's the point to say 5 o'clock if they come at 6 o'clock? You can say 6 o'clock from the beginning, but then they come at 7. So that's one point. I got used to it now, so I don't, doesn't bother me anymore. And now, lately, obviously, the traffic. Mm-hmm. If they only could do something about this traffic problem.
Is there something that is done in Switzerland that you think we can adopt here, perhaps?
I think Bern, where I used to live before I came to Malta, is about the same amount of people like Valletta and the surrounding areas, 210,000. Mm-hmm. And we have a very good tram system going through the city from the outer areas to the inner city. Mm-hmm. And to me this seems to work brilliant because you have like every 5 minutes you have a tram. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. then you get through the city in no time. But a big part of the city is car free.
Is it?
So they would have to find a street which they can make car free, which is practically impossible in Malta. Mm. The other solution, and actually I think there is talk about it, to lift the tram system up.
Yes.
And have it on top of the street or in the middle of the street, because our street are some places so wide, they could easily make a middle lane like a tram or lift it up on pillars or whatever.
Certain main roads, yes. And anything else that frustrated you, perhaps bureaucracy, applying for permits or passports or ID cards or something like that?
Yeah, I remember in 2000 when Malta and Switzerland signed the agreement that we Swiss can have dual citizenship. It took me about a year until I had all the papers ready. Because the problem is in Switzerland, we have a family book. We don't have single documents. Mm-hmm. And then my parents had to go to the relevant authorities and have them copied and then confirmed by legal authorities. So it took quite some time.
But from both sides, not just from the Maltese side?
It was more from the Swiss side to get all the papers I needed to get the passport.
Oh, okay. So, because I was referring to perhaps any, sometimes people say in Malta there's too much bureaucracy and you have to wait too long for certain paperwork and you don't really seem to have encountered anything that frustrated you too much.
Not that I can think of, but then whenever I needed something, either I was lucky to get to the right person, or they didn't have too much work, I don't know.
Well, that's good news. That's very good news. Well, let's go to the things you absolutely love about Malta and you wouldn't change, and that you would boast perhaps to your friends abroad about Malta and your life here.
The friendliness of the people. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. I mean, when you sit in a bus, the whole bus is talking to each other. Not everybody sits in his chair, looks straight ahead and says nothing. Somebody says something and all of a sudden you have a whole conversation going through the whole bus. That's something I really like.
So that wouldn't happen in Switzerland on the trams?
Not really. Mm-hmm. And then I like the countryside a lot. It's so beautiful to walk in parts, and you can actually walk parts where you don't even see one building or one person.
Okay.
So contrary to what some people think, that we are all built up, there are still some parts where you can walk and see nobody.
Well, that's good, and I hope we hold on to them then.
I hope so too. Let's not build further to the sides, enlarge the villages, try to get higher where needed.
Angela, when you first came to Malta and you got used to the Maltese food, and could you tell us a bit about the differences between Maltese cuisine and Swiss cuisine that you were used to in Switzerland, and what are your favorite Maltese foods now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is different. I mean, it's much more based on olive oil, which in Switzerland we do use it now, but 27 years ago, I don't think my mother used olive oil in our household. Mm. And what I like is the Mediterranean art of cooking the vegetables, which is different to what we cook in Switzerland. But then I'm a person, I try everything. I even would try a grasshopper, for example.
Ah, well, you like to travel and you're very open-minded. Tell us a little bit about Swiss food culture. I mean, we know about Swiss chocolate, for example.
Yeah, the chocolate. And the Rösti is very famous as well. That's a potato dish. You grate the potatoes and then you fry it in oil in a flat frying pan. You turn it around and it comes like a cake, but it's just fried. Mm-hmm. Fried grated potatoes, that's very famous.
And of course, milk products, cheese.
Yes, cheese. Every region has its own cheese in Switzerland.
But when you first moved here, I think it was in the 80s, and we Maltese like to joke about the Maltese chocolate of the 80s. That must have been a bit of a shock.
It was. I can remember whenever my parents came, they brought us heaps of chocolate in the suitcase. Because yeah. I remember there was no Mars, no foreign chocolate, really.
Yes. We won't go into why, but there was a system at the time that was based on locally produced chocolate for whatever reason. There was a ban on foreign chocolate, so that must have been a bit of a difference coming from Switzerland. But what about the general Maltese food? Did it take you a long time to get used to it, or
no? I learned from my mother-in-law, from John's mother, the local dishes, and I still sometimes today I phone her up and I tell her, remind me, how do I do Rospelfon? So I do the Maltese dishes as mixed with Swiss dishes.
That sounds appetizing.
Yeah, and my favorite food would be the rabbit.
Really, really rabbit dishes, the Maltese fancata.
I really love that.
And the members of your family when they've come?
Yeah, they like to try Maltese dishes as well.
Do you eat rabbit in Switzerland?
No. No, it's not no. It's my family. We are not used to eat rabbit very rarely.
And in Switzerland, it's not a famous dish at all.
No.
But here in Malta, you like it. Speaking of, you mentioned Rospelfon and fancata. I mean, do you find yourself putting in Maltese words here and there in your normal day-to-day conversation?
I think I do, yes.
You know, things like mela and weya.
Yes, yeah, those small words, yes, I do use them, even as speaking German to my client.
Well, you find yourself saying those words and they ask you, I'm sorry, what does that mean?
Exactly. Yeah, I do use those little words.
And the future, do you see yourself staying, you and John and your family staying here for the rest of your life? Or perhaps there's a move back to Switzerland at some point?
I don't think I would move back to Switzerland. I didn't lose contact. When I go, I still meet my old school friends, my work friends, my family mostly. But after 10 days, I want to come back home to Malta.
And home is now Malta?
Yes.
So, Angela Peel, how do you feel when people ask you, where are you from? Especially when you're doing your tours and you meet so many Germans, for example, doing a tour of Malta, and they ask you, where are you from? What do you say?
Well, I have dual citizenship, so I have a Maltese and a Swiss passport. But when I start my tour, when I introduce myself, I don't need to say where I come from. My German accent is so clearly Swiss. They can hear it when I just say the first sentence. So that is usually explained when I start talking. But then when I continue, I tell them that they will realize how happy I am in Malta because I will be talking about my country and my people.
Angela Peel, thank you very much for being on Minainen Baranin on Campus FM.
You're welcome. Thank you.
U dik kienet edizzjoni oħra tal-programm Minajnejn Barranin, fejn jiena Colin Fitz niltaqgħu niddiskuti t-tajjeb u dak li hu inħas tajjeb f'pajjiżna, ma' diversi persuni ta' nazzjonalitajiet differenti li għal xi raġuni jew oħra għamlu lil Malta id-dar tagħhom. Il-programm jixxandar kull nhar ta' tlieta fit-tmienja ta' filgħaxija b'repetizzjoni l-ħamis fl-10 ta' filgħodu kif ukoll tistgħu issibuh fuq is-sit elettroniku ta' Campus FM.
Thank you.